Blog Talk Radio.
This is Roy Appelrouse and Rich Bergeron.
Yo, this is Tornado, Tony Pennycal.
And Tony, I'm going to tell you, I might have to switch my nickname up after this weekend. You know, we had the Battle of the Badges, but I had a little extracurricular activity at the club afterwards. I was Richie the Ruckus Regulator for a little while. I had to separate some guys who wanted to get their beer muscles on after they hit last call. And they got a boot on. Better get punched.
Yeah.
I think he had to play a good referee there for a little while. It was fun. All in all, that was the only low light, really, in the whole thing. And it was after most of the guys had already left, so I don't even think any of the New Yorkers got to see that part of it. But that was a great battle of the Badges, too. I definitely want to fight on the next one. I didn't get to fight on this one because, you know, it was just a little too late. Guy that I would have fought. I had meeting him and having some good conversations with him. And I'll fight him next time, I guess. But I don't know. He didn't seem like he has as much experience as I have. So I'd rather fight somebody a little bit better. Not that he wasn't good, but know, I also think that I could get way lower than 215 by the next time they come up here, which they're trying to get them back up here again in October now. That's the latest. Because October 1st is the NYPD versus the FDNY down there in Madison Square Garden. You know, and for a little while there, I was trying to get Bobby McGuire to get me on that card, but then I was thinking, like, you know, there's no way he's going to be able to get me on that. And sure enough, he's like, yeah, yeah, everybody wants to get on that card, buddy. Keep dreaming. So, you know, they're going to come back up here, hopefully do it again. They definitely won. They had way more fights they won than our guys won. But I did my tributes to my friend Tony, my other friend Tony. My friend Tony, and my other friend Tony. I do have three Tonys for friends, you know. But it was great. His family was all there in force, and I had a bunch of veterans come up to me afterwards and say good job, so that went great. Scientific Social Solutions charity there, you know, they had a booth set up and a bunch of stuff going on. They did good. And the house was pretty packed. There was almost about 700 people there as far as ticket sales, I think. And then it looked like there was about 1,000 people there all together, you know, with all the people that are connected to the fighters and fight crew and corner men and all that stuff, officials. I would say there was almost 1,000 people there.
Good.
That's the Bolts. So it was good. And, you know, the FDNY guys really loved their part of the tribute that I did for them. And Bobby came right up into the ring for that. He had a beer with me afterwards at the after party. And I got to meet all their guys right away, pretty much as soon as they got there, because they had me go around and ask all the guys what they wanted to come into for music. So, you know, here I am running around, you know, meeting everybody right away. And they said they felt really at home, and we made them feel good. And they definitely have some experience. I mean, these guys definitely said that was the edge in the whole thing. Like, I was screaming at the New England guys to throw a double jab. I didn't see, like, a single double jab. I was yelling at everybody for jabs, I felt like, you know. But I was right ringside, and, you know, it was kind of fun to get back in that mode as a coach, yelling at these guys, throw a jab, you know, hit him in the face. And, Tony, I did get us in the program book.
Good. You said you got us in it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to send you a copy. I got two of them.
Yes, you do. Do I look awesome in it?
Yeah, well, it's the one that's on our blog, you know, the picture of us at Fenway with you, the big snarl on your face.
Hold on. My snarl is great.
All right, well, we have a big show tonight. We're going to continue the mode of, you know, doing a show for charity here. We just did one Saturday, but this is another charity. Well, it's not really a charity. It's more like a theme of a, you know, a good thing this guy is doing. All these guys are involved in. Jose Madera, Calvin Qatar, Jared Dumai, and Ivan Sanchez are all going to try to join us at the same time around 8:20 here in about 12 minutes. And they're part of a program called Guns Down and Knuckles Up. So that's why I say, you know, not to change my nickname to Richie the Ruckus Regulator. Put those guns down, knuckles up. Fight for sport, not for blood. Anyway, we're also going to have Steve Martin on in the second hour. And Steve, we're going to talk a little bit more about the whole Anthony Palermo Memorial.info picture.
You're not talking about Steve Martin from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and the Three Amigos, are you?
Well, you know, who knows? We'll keep everybody in suspense. No, it's not the comedian. It's not the comedian Steve Martin. But he's pretty funny. He's a funny guy.
Sure.
Should see some of his Facebook pictures with his little son, you know. It's one of these big walls with graffiti on it, you know. His son's doing the bad pose, the hat turned backwards. But, yeah, he's a classy guy. I graduated from Norwich, and he showed up at the event. And basically, he just committed to doing, on his website, bepositiveproject.com, as in the letter B, positiveproject.com. He did this thing where he's got a hero section already built, and he gives 50% of his proceeds to charity. So he's going to give... portion of everything donated. Somebody, anything that anybody buys on that website, BePositiveProject.com, they can click a little option to donate it to Tony's fund, so that it's now just not going to be just a run-of-the-mill plaque here, and that's it. It's going to be forever. Every year we're going to give out a scholarship, because this kid is generating so much attention from specifically people in the service right now. I think we've gotten over $1,000 just from people in the service overseas. This guy's over in Afghanistan. He's sending us a check from Afghanistan. So, it's just a tremendous buzz. And of course, all of his family showed up. And I just now, the other night, got an email list going for his whole family. So I'm sure once I get that going and we start doing a couple more events, we'll have, by the time we put this plaque up, which I'm hoping to do it in November for Veterans Day at the high school, we're going to have money to give to a kid for a scholarship, or at least, deals of promise to a kid for a scholarship. So it's just way more than I expected, but, great to know that these fellow servicemen are stepping up in a big way for Tony and getting this plaque done. It was awesome. And we had a great night of boxing, too. You can't forget, these guys came to fight. There was only one kid, I'm not even going to mention his name. There was only one kid I saw in the whole card that really should have been in the ring. Everybody else looked like they trained really hard for it, if they had any kind of weakness, it wasn't in heart, it wasn't in physique, it was just in style, these guys, and experience maybe. Some of the FDNY guys seemed like they were fresher because they had a little bit more experience, and they knew what they were getting into. And the main event turned out to be pretty decent. The guy that we had on our show had him quit. Did not win, but he won the first round, hands down. And unfortunately, I could tell you how he did in the second two rounds if I watched it, but I didn't. I saw moments of it when the crowd get into it when I looked up at the ring, but it was like right at the end of the night. So I watched the whole first round. I thought Adam was on cruise control. He came out real fast. He landed way more shots. And then second and third round, I guess he kind of fell off a little bit. And he got caught a few times. And the kid from Dorchester, who maybe I should have been rooting for, but just because I interviewed Adam, I was rooting for him. But kid from Dorchester from the gang unit, Billy Traft, came out and got the win. And in the rematch, he's won again. So Adam was, a great fight, great came in, did what he could do in the first round, and I don't know what happened. I'll have to watch the replay, but they both got fight of the night, even though they said beforehand, oh, we're not going to be the main event fight of the night. They changed their minds, much to the chagrin of another Norwich graduate that was given the fight of the night awards, because he had to give a boxing glove to the other kid that was something else. But anyway, the other fight of the night was a kid from New England that came back, and he was a corrections officer, I think, Garen. And he comes back from getting clobbered in the first round, and he hit this kid, Velasquez from New York, Ricky the Razor Velasquez, hit him with a right hand, I think it was, and just boom, he was a flash knockout there for a second. Velasquez was out on his feet doing the stagger leg. And the ref jumps in and does the standing eight count and saves him from getting knocked on his ass. And then Velasquez fought right to the end of it. He had all three rounds. He stuck with it and stuck it out. But, the kid had his number from then on. And he won the fight of the night with Velasquez for the undercard there for the main event. And overall, it's so good that we want to do it again right away, as soon as possible. And with the response from Anthony, like I said, we're going to do some events with that and get that all out there. We definitely have a lot of boxing and MMA to talk about, too, since we got two guests on the show. We've kind of got to shove it into a little time zone. I don't know if you get to see any boxing, but I watched a little bit of the Frock versus Kessler fight. Did you see any boxing there, Tony?
I did not get to see the Frock versus Kessler fight. I read about it. My dad saw it. He thought it could have gone to Frock. I actually picked Kessler to win that fight. But he thought Frock could have pulled it out. And he said Kessler a couple times had some opportunities, and he doesn't know how to finish. I did get to see the Areola-Adamek fight, and Arriola, he's got to do something about his style. He's too straight up. He's too straightforward in. And another problem that he does is, like, you know, he doesn't cut the ring off. He fights like a guy that should be, you know, taller and faster than he is. At his style, when he fights, because guys now are just going to know to move on him and hit him from a distance. Because he comes in so straight up, he's dead set for a right hand. I mean, and he had his moments against Adamac. I mean, Adamac was outboxing him early, then he tried to slug, and that was a bad mistake. And Arriola was able to hit him with some shots. And, yeah, he hurt his hand, and I think that hampered him a little bit. But the fact of the matter is, once Adamac started moving and using his athletic ability again, Arriola was screwed because there was nothing he could do about it. You know, he could keep coming after him and keep plodding after him, but his feet are not fast enough. He's too flat-footed. And he's too straight up and straight in. And that's not the way he needs to fight. He needs to fight. And you know another guy that, on maybe a little bit higher level, but would do something similar to that, was David Tua. David Tua was a tremendous puncher. Could knock you cold with that left hook. But he always would fight too straight up, too straight in, not throwing enough punches, and he wasn't fast enough. Guys like that need to fight almost, I mean, now granted, they're not going to have the same skill set or speed or maybe even stamina, but they need to fight more like on the level of like what Marciano would do, or even, I mean, I know they're not going to have Tyson's freakish speed at his young age, but even like a guy like Joe Frazier. Frazier, you know, was doing the bobbing and weaving, cutting the ring off, putting a lot of pressure on, but he was giving you a moving target. Arriola doesn't, and he was there to be hit. Even Marciano was better defensively than he got credit for. Just he would come in. He was, obviously wasn't as fast as Frazier or Tyson, but he would use his head and upper body movement, you know, to keep the pressure on and, you know, keep guys backing up. And Ariola's got to change his style. That straight up, straight in ain't going to work, not at this level.
All right. Well, there's Tony's soapbox rant of the week right there on the heavyweights. I'm sure you were bawling your eyes out when you heard that John Ruiz was retiring.
I was.
No, I shouldn't say that. He had a great career. You know, we wish him well. I'd like to see him at more local events. He is very well-spoken to the guy they call the Quiet Man.
And you know what the shame about it, the thing is? John Ruiz had two things working against him his whole career. Three things. I'm going to say that. He had three things working against him. And two things were, in a way, his fault, and one thing was not his fault. The two things his fault. Number one, John Ruiz is just, and I've never met him, but I've listened to interviews with him, I've read interviews with him. He's a nice guy. He's a quiet guy, he's soft-spoken, doesn't generate a lot of charisma. That kind of hurt him in the long run, because he wasn't a good draw. And the other thing that hurt him was his style. Now, I think he was a little bit more entertaining before he had that fight with David Tua back. I guess that was the 96 or 97, and he walked into a left hook in the first round, actually the first punch, and he got rocked pretty bad, and he got knocked out. And I don't think he was ever the same. I think that's when he became more cautious, more clutch and grab, and that's what killed him, was his style. You know, people say, oh, John Ruiz, oh, God, oh, he's fighting again, oh, dear Lord, why won't he just go away? So it's like, he never had the popularity because nobody wanted to see him because his style was not crowd-pleasing. Those are the two things that, okay, one was his personality, and that's not a knock against the guy. He's legitimately a nice gentleman, and, you know, he just didn't have that natural charisma. The other one was he just didn't have a fan-friendly style. And the other thing that hurt him for so many years was people hated his trainer, Norman Stone. Norman Stone was hated in boxing. I mean, he was hated so bad that when he got into an altercation with Roy Jones' trainer, Alvin Merkerson, before the Jones-Ruiz fight, and Merkerson hit him and knocked him down, and Ring Magazine put a picture in it, and they said, normally we would never make fun of a human being knocked on the ground in need of medical attention, but this is Norman Stone, so we really don't care. And I think that really hurt John, because the fact that Stone was so hated.
Well, anyway, you know, I did catch, like I said, a little bit of the Frock versus Kessler fight, and I know that there's some boxing coming up this weekend. We're going to have to start the other interview.
The big one this weekend.
Yeah, the big one. The big one. And I'm going to be posting another little analysis of that later from our other resident boxing expert and historian, Patrick McElligott. But we're going to get on our first guest a little bit early here in a minute, and I do want to sneak in a little MMA news before we get to the interview. And, of course, you know, we can't go without talking about Tito the wife beater.
Yeah.
Throwing around Jenna Jameson. You know, not in a good way, I guess. Looks like he's now coming out. He had a press conference saying that she's into the Oxycontins, and he was just trying to have a little intervention that got a little physical or whatever. You know, he says he didn't hit her. She says she tore something in her shoulder, that she threw her in the tub. So, I don't know. She had visible injuries. That's why they arrested him. The cops arrested him. And obviously that happens like the other day, so that's not the reason why him and Chuck aren't fighting. But I wasn't really paying 100% attention to the show, but I think there was some talk about, you know, Chuck not being at the fight at the end, and whether he's in jail for doing something stupid or what. You know, I don't know whether that has anything to do with it. But John Hackelford there, his assistant coach, was like, oh, it'd be like John Gotti. I'm calling the shots from jail. So, I don't know whether he meant he was actually in jail or what. I didn't catch that part. It was like, you know, one of those little parts of the show that flew over my head. I wasn't paying attention, and I didn't bother to rewind it because the way the internet thing works, like, you know, you get your 50 minutes and that's it for the day. You can't watch anything else, so no rewinding. But anyway, the point of the thing is we still don't know. We still got to keep tuning in for what gets the fight called off, but, you know, now we got the situation with Tito. We don't know whether the UFC is going to kick him out just for that alone. We'll see. But that was kind of interesting, and I hate to talk about it more than the actual show this week, which really was unbelievable in a lot of ways. It's actually, I'm just reading the story now. USA Today says this latest episode pulled in 1.8 million viewers. So it's pretty big for them. It featured just an incredible fight at the end of it. Josh Bryant versus Chris McCrary. And just a tremendous three-round fight. Both guys just undefeated going in. And it was almost like, you know, the UFC was kind of like apologizing for all the shitty things they've done. You know, like all of a sudden every wounded warrior, you know, every walking wounded guy that's hurt is getting like the best medical care. Not everybody's getting thrown off the show, you know, because they had to throw a kid off the show last week for a broken jaw. Now this one kid, you know, broke his hand. He's still on the show, but he just can't fight. Another guy got a shoulder surgery, obviously probably paid for by the UFC, but he's still sticking around. And it's just kind of funny. And now, we always talk about how it's kind of dangerous for them to do this show and then have these matchups picked by coaches. You know, not a matchmaker, so you're purposely trying to get an uneven match so your fighter wins. And this time they had one of the best matchmaking deals ever, I mean. Tito made the match as the coach, thinking his guy was that much better, but the kid that won was just an unassuming guy. He could fight like hell. And really, the difference was that after the second round, Chris McCrary, they made a point of saying beforehand that Tito overworked him. But that's going to be like a whole other saga that unfolds in the next episode. But anyway, Chris was sitting on a stool at the end of the second round. Didn't really expect, it seemed, to fight in the third. Neither did the other guy, but, you know, he was walking around because Hackelford wouldn't let him sit down. Chuck's assistant coach was there, and he wouldn't let him sit down. He kept going, walk around, you know. He didn't say you might have to go for round three, but he was like, you just won this thing, you know. Raise your arms, walk around. And I think that's what was really the difference, because the other kid just let it all his lactic acid build up. He sat down, and he was a different fighter the third round. He had nothing left. So it was like one of those real awesome fights. It was like probably the best in Ultimate Fighter history, I'd have to say. But that's enough about that. We'll talk about all the upcoming stuff later. Let's get we're going to start off with Jose Madeira. He's the gym manager. We're just going to kind of chain right through this thing. Call one guy at a time. connect them up. So I'm just going to add, this is Jose Mujeres. He's the gym manager of this Guns Down and Knuckles Up program.
Jose.
How you doing?
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron here. How's it going?
Good, and yourself?
Good. I'm just going to call Calvin, too, and these other guys and get them all up on the show here. Calvin Kataris, next.
All right, no problem.
And how do you pronounce Jared's last name?
My last name?
Jared. Jared's.
Jared Dumas.
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 Okay.
And it's Calvin Cater.
Cater.
Yeah,
Cater. Calvin.
Hey, what's going on?
All right, we got Calvin Cater on the line. I'm just adding everybody one by one here, so forgive me, but you're going to hear some ringing.
No problem.
Jared's next on the list.
Hello?
Jared.
What's happening?
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing?
Good. This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron here. We got Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line.
Yo, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
You're going to hear a little ringing here. The last guy we're going to add is Ivan Sanchez. This is going to be first here.
Ivan. Hello.
Ivan.
Yeah, how's it going?
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron, and we got Tony the Tornado Pentacal.
Yo. Hey. How's it going?
Good. All right. I don't know who wants to start, but I know I just talked a little bit about the program. It's called Guns Down, Knuckles Up. So we got four guys on here. Let's fight.
All right. This whole thing that Deborah's speaking. If you want, I'll take the mic first, and then I can pass it on.
Okay. Who's this speaking now?
Jose Madera.
All right, Jose Madera, gym manager. Go ahead. Tell us what it's all about.
How you doing? Pretty much the Gun Down, Knuckle Up movement is pretty much started. A group of us pretty much grew up, you know, in the ghetto, and we had our differences and faults in life, and we pretty much all on the right path now, and pretty much we came up with the idea. The MMA thing's big right now, number one spectator sport. And there's a couple of local guys around with good talent, and pretty much I got involved just trying to help them get exposure. And they all pretty much train a couple miles away from home, so we came up with the idea we could build something closer to home, cut down their travel time, and get them more training time. So that's how that came about. And being part of the problem, not being part of the situation, is only getting better, you know. So being part of the resolution of it. So pretty much that's how it came about. Calvin Cater's a top prospect in the New England Northeast region at 155, and he has an upcoming fight in June 19th at Combat Zone 33 in Bike Week Laconia in Guilford, New Hampshire. And also Jared Dumas will be fighting in Ivan Sanchez. So pretty much that we're just trying to get some of these kids off the street. There's some talent out there that hasn't been noticed, and we're just trying to give them the opportunity to get off the streets and, you know, get on the right path, you know what I mean? Everybody falls, but, you know, you can always get up if you got that extra push behind you. So we're just trying to give that extra push to get some of these kids off the street and get them involved. You know, they fight in the streets for free. Why not fight, get in the ring and fight and get, man, hopefully make a career out of it, you know what I mean?
Okay. Well, Calvin, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with this?
Excuse me?
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in all this, Guns Down, Knuckles Up?
Well, I began MMA when I saw a close friend of mine, Dave George, who actually runs the promotion Combat Zone that we'll be fighting for. He had a fight a while back, and I saw it, and that was around the time when I was graduating high school. And it looked like something that I was interested in doing. You know, I took a semester off school, and I was wrestling back in high school. I missed the feeling of competing, so looked like fun. I tried it out and took a fight 6 months later. And it was a pretty intense fight, and I've been chasing that feeling ever since. You know, I've been fighting ever since. And back over towards the intense MMA over here in Lawrence, it's, you know, right where I kind of grew up in that area. And I love going down there. It's a closed gym, a lot of tough, rugged, upcoming talent coming out of there. And why not be a part of it, you know?
And Jared, what's your role in all this? Jared? Sure.
Yeah.
What's your role in all this? How'd you get involved? What's your deal?
I also got involved. Dave George, owner of the Combat Zone, he's my cousin. You know, he got me involved when I was younger. You know, I started off in karate. I did a little bit of wrestling and stuff. And Dave started fighting and got Cal into it. And I looked up to the both of them guys, you know. Them guys going in, winning fights and stuff. You know, I wanted to get into it too, me being the younger guy. I looked up to them, and, you know, I started doing a little bit of training and got my first fight when I was 18. And since then, you know, I've had a few fights, and same thing, you know, it's just a rush, you know. Wanted to get in there, do good things, keeping me out of trouble. You know, down here at Intense doing good things. You know, we got a lot of good guys down here doing good stuff. Some Intense gym down here.
And Ivan, why don't you explain how you got involved in all that too?
I got involved just wanted to get off the streets, you know, came over to the gym, you know, let off a little stress, started competing, doing a little bit of tournaments, grappling tournaments, started getting very well at it. Fell in love, you know, this is gonna be actually my first fight in the cage. So it's gonna be a good experience for me. I just keep training, trying my hardest, you know, never give up, don't quit, and just, you know, win is my goal, you know.
So were you one of those guys that actually put a gun down to get in there?
Yeah, I never held a gun, but,
all right.
You know, I'm here, though, you know what I mean? I'm here competing, and that's what it's all about right now, you know, and it's keeping me out of trouble.
Has there been, you know, a good interest in the kids that would otherwise be in gangs, do you think? Has there been a lot that you've definitely seen that could have gone down the wrong path and you got them?
Oh, absolutely. I see now that I'm here helping the kids out. Helping the kids out makes me feel a lot better and makes me realize how many things I could have done when I was younger, you know? All the things that I missed out when I see all these kids doing these things now, you know? I should have been doing this a long time ago.
And how do people get involved in the gym? You know, how do they sign up and
what's the
address and all that?
We're pretty much on Facebook. We're on the internet. You know, just on good advertising. A lot of people helping out schools. You know, wrestlers from the schools come out over here. Teachers. We got the mayor. We got a lot of people involved. You know, so we're getting. You know, a lot of people are knowing about us and they're just walking in every minute of the hour. You know, come check us out, and guys are just coming in and just trying it out, you know. Some people, it's not for them, and some people it is, you know.
Cool. Well, who's the boxing coach? Because I know Tony wants to ask a boxing question.
The boxing coach is the legend, Bugsy Martinez. Hold on, let me put him on for a second.
Okay.
Hello?
Hey.
There we go. They're calling you.
How you doing, brother?
Hey. So you're the boxing coach?
Yes, I am.
All right.
The legend.
The legend. All right. Well, we call our co-host here the Rain Man of Boxing. Your name's Bugsy Martinez? What's the first name?
It's Jose Bugsy Martinez.
Jose Bugsy Martinez. And have you fought before, or have you always been a coach, trainer?
I fought when I was a young kid as an amateur in Lawrence on Water Street. By the Pelletier family, and then when I was 14 in Brockton, by Goody Petronelli.
Oh, there you go.
That's you. That's your boy, Rich.
Goody Petronelli, yeah, I've been up to his gym.
I was a young kid.
My trainer. So.
Yeah, at the time I was there, Hagler was still champ.
Awesome. You know, it was pretty cool to meet. You probably know him. Pitt Perrin, remember him? Roger Perrin?
Who?
Roger Perrin.
No, I remember Buster.
He was Marvin's corner for a couple of his fights.
No, the only time I seen anybody was Pat Petronelli and Goody, the two brothers, and their son Tony, and also Robbie Sims, Marvin Hagler's stepbrother. They were the only ones I ever seen at the gym, you know.
I know all those guys. I know Tony. He's a good guy. I met Goody. We had his on the radio show one time. And it's great to talk to you. I don't know. Tony, you got any boxing questions? Shoot him a boxing question.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I know you're running the program up there. Similar to a program that I was involved in down in the Philadelphia area, I was down at a rec center for a number of years, which the one trainer who actually worked with former light heavyweight champion Matthew Saad Muhammad, the trainer, he was an ordained reverend. He still runs the program down there. And that's his thing, as he talked about for decades, from the 60s on, about just trying to get kids off the streets, out of gangs, and then get them in the gym, get them in a boxing program. One thing he taught me, and I tell this to anybody I ever work with now, especially younger kids and adolescents, is when I was, you know, that age as a teenager, I was trying to find myself. I was a decent athlete, but I wasn't great, and I was decent in school, but I wasn't great, and I never had, you know, my calling card in life. So my thing was I wanted people to notice me, so I took to the streets. I mean, and I fought a lot. You know, I never carried a weapon, but I fought a lot, you know, and I wasn't going on the right path. And so they got me in the boxing gym, and I felt I didn't have to prove anything to anybody anymore. I didn't have to be a badass. You wanted to know how good I was? Come see me fight. And I mean, that actually was the defining point of my life, and that was 17 years ago almost.
Is there a question in there, Tony?
No, I was talking about, you know, some of the experiences I had, something similar to that. I mean, when you get a lot of these younger kids today, either the boxing or the MMA, when they come in the gym, do a lot of them feel like they have to, like, prove something to somebody, or do they... I mean, the reason I got into it was because I felt like I was inferior, and I wanted to, you know, be somebody. And do you notice that in a lot of these kids, that a lot of them were taken to the streets because they were trying to prove themselves?
And here in Lawrence, the kids here?
Yeah.
Here, they always got to prove something, but it's the way the system is already in Lawrence. They're struggling to try to fit in, and sometimes they have to act like they're tough guys, and sometimes they don't want to be tough guys, but they have to be. So, you know, you got a lot of kids in Lawrence that need help, you know, I'll be honest with you. And if we can make more recreation gyms in Lawrence, any kind, any, all kinds of different, it'll make a great difference in Lawrence. Like, things will slow down from when it comes to crime and gangs, but the more gyms we make, the better. We got to stop making more lockup facilities. We need to make more recreational facilities. That's my point of view. You know.
That's a great point. And you know, how many different kids go there specifically for boxing?
Right now, it's not so full like it should be. Kids are just starting to figure it out, what's going on here. You know, the MMA, the boxing, the jiu-jitsu, you know, many different things. It's getting out now. The word is really getting out now. It's starting to get full. Some days are slower than others, but like I said, it's coming around, you know.
Well, thanks a lot for jumping on. This is all new history. We're breaking ground here. We've got five different guests on our first good segment. That's awesome. But,
thanks very much, and I apologize if I paused for a minute. I was talking to somebody, and I know your friend was talking for a little while, so I didn't do it on purpose. So I apologize for that, and hopefully I get to meet you gentlemen in person one day.
Yeah, definitely. This thing up in Laconia, that's my other home, you know. I got a lot of family up there, so I would definitely love to be there.
That'll be great. Listen, I just also wanted to say that I helped out open another boxing gym at Merrimack Street and sells pizza area and 365 Merrimack Street, and that's what I really like to do. I like to help people open up many gyms like I was telling you at the beginning, the more gyms we bring into Lawrence, the more things kids have to do, especially the summer. Summer's always the worst, you know?
Yeah.
But listen, you have a good night, and it was nice talking to you.
Thanks a lot.
Have a good night, man.
All right, you too, brother.
All right. So everybody else there still on the call, I don't know if you guys just want to kind of shoot around, talk about some of the experiences you've had up there at the gym, and, you know, how are you getting kids in there, and what's your approach to the whole thing?
Excuse me?
Want to take it, Kyle?
What's up?
You want to grab the mic?
What's up? What's the question?
You want to share some of your gym experiences.
What's been some of
my gym experiences? Well, we haven't been doing much sparring yet, but I'd like to say getting punched in the face, but not yet. Hopefully sometime soon. right now, just a whole lot of hitting the mitts with Bugsy and hitting the bag, working out with the guys, you know, building a team, building a family. And I think that's one of the most important steps in building a gym. And you know, we're taking the right steps. You know, they didn't grow too big too fast. You know, they're taking it with how many people come in at the same time. You know, classes are growing rapidly, and that's the gym's not even like open to the public yet. You know what I mean? It's opening May 4th, so you know, I don't expect bigger and better things coming from that gym. And you know, things only getting better and improving. So I'm excited to be a part of it.
All right. How do you guys attract new customers? I mean, what's your business plan to get kids really off the streets and out there into the gym?
What was the question?
What's the big plan to actually get more kids, literally off the streets and the gym?
Well, the plan to get them off is pretty much in advertising is number one, but if we can show them something that they can pretty much be out. What they can get out of it in a sense of discipline, you know, self-respect, you know what I mean? Everything doesn't be, you know, most kids just out of anger just pick up the gun and go take care of a situation that way when either, you know, before thinking about the situation or if it's that serious, you know, I'd rather punch a guy than shoot a guy, you know what I mean? I'm not going to do life in jail for shooting a guy when I could, you know, it's a whole different. Some people, it changes different views, you know. Once you get a little discipline in you, you got some sort of direction, something to look forward to instead of just the same routine coming out your house and just hanging out in the corner. Now, if you got some place to go and utilize your time positively and giving them something to do, and you know, it's an adrenaline rush, you know, instead of just hanging out in the corner and waiting for the cops to chase you off the corner. So it's a big difference, you know, giving them something to do. I go around myself because I live in Lawrence, so I'm always constantly stopping and giving an earful to the kids I see in the corner because I was once there myself, you know. I was I'm living proof of it, you know. I've been there, done that. I've did a lot of time in prison as a young teenager, and I fortunately I learned from my wrongdoings, and that's why today here, you know, we got Intense MMA opening up. Our grand opening Saturday, May 1st. And pretty much I got a bunch of good guys together, and we're all on the same page trying to help one another out and grow as a family. But it's only going to start a foundation at home. So as long as we keep a strong foundation in the gym, we can help others out, you know. First, you gotta be able to discipline yourself before you can discipline someone else. But pretty much that's how we're taking it, one day at a time. But the turnout's been great. We got 40, 45 guys showing up a day. Every day, we're not even open yet officially. Saturday is our grand opening, so we're looking forward to a good turnout.
Awesome. And, you know, being May 1st, the big fight, you're gonna have the big fight, the Mayweather fight on big screen TV there, or what?
Oh, yeah, actually, June 19th, we got five guys fighting out of our gym. It's going to be sick down in Guilford, New Hampshire, Bike Week. So pretty much a lot of the younger kids that they watching on TV, and now they get to meet some pro fighters, so they're psyched about it, and it makes them want to be more involved, you know, looking up to Calvin, Jared, we got Tyson, Dan Keith, Wilfredo Santiago, you know, we got a couple good guys around here all over this northeast region, and they're some top quality fighters, so, you know, a lot of the younger kids look up to them, and they see them as celebrities, as mentors and role models. So it gives them something, you know. They just want to come to the gym and meet them. Some of them want to come to train, and you know, some people come to look, and some people come get involved. But even if they come to look, it just lets me know that I've gotten in their ear or their head some way somehow, and they heard about us. So even if they come in and just look around, I feel good about that. You know,
not the fighting thing is not for everybody. Some people like it, some people don't. But, you know, it, just to have people walk in, it feels good, even if they're not signing up, even if they're just checking out the place. You know, it just shows me that my message is being heard.
Cool.
So that's a good, you know, it's a good feeling for me and for the rest of the team, you know?
Yeah, what's your background? How did you get into it yourself?
I actually got involved, a friend of mine's, Wilfredo Santiago, who's an amateur fighter, and he's fighting June 19th also. I followed Calvin around for a while as a pro. I went to a couple of his fights, and I myself, when I was growing up, I fought a lot in the streets, and I never looked at it as a profession, but and Wilfredo came to me with the opportunity, he asked me, because I knew a couple guys like Calvin, he asked me to, he told me he wanted to fight, and so I went around, and pretty much I met up with David George from Combat Zone, and he gave Wilfredo his fight, first fight, his second fight, and pretty much from there, the ball just started rolling and snowballed, and every day something new pops up, and more positivity's coming out of it, so we're just taking it day by day right now. And Will came to me with the option of managing him, so that opened up doors. You know, meeting other people, meeting other trainers, other fighters. So it's pretty much all like a big family in this area with the trainers and fighters.
This event is actually at Meadowbrook, right?
It's at Meadowbrook, correct.
Wow, you know, because I used to actually, when I lived up in New Hampshire, I used to work for the Laconia Citizen.
Okay.
I probably know all the people that you guys have talked to set this up, because I used to interview all the acts that used to go through Meadowbrook, like Alice Cooper and, you know, just the B acts, you know, like the.
Yeah, that's gonna be a sick event. You know, capacity 6,500 people. We're trying to sell that place out. Get the crowd pumped up, and put on a good show. You know, that's the goal, and that's what we're going to do. You know, we got that guns down, knuckle up motto, pretty much. You know, a coward carries a gun, a man's going to fight you. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's tougher than nobody. You know what I'm saying? And nobody has to prove nothing to nobody. If you want to prove something, get in the cage. You know what I'm saying? You know, any coward can pick up a gun and kill somebody, and then what? You know, you ain't proving nothing. You know, if you got something to prove that much, you know, call them out, get in the cage, and get it over with. You know what I mean? And, you know, it's all a learning experience. Whether you lose or win, there's no such thing as a loss, because a loss is a learning experience. So we just take them all, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. This is great. I'm definitely going to be there. That's definitely not something I would miss. You know, I'll probably know some people that have helped you set this up. So it'll be a good time for me to make a reunion appearance up there and see some MMA. I don't think I've ever heard of them doing this before either, so it's probably going to be a first for them. And you guys, you know, you got the great motto for bringing a kid up to the country like that to fight on something like this, you know, just to see it. You know, that's an experience in itself for a kid that's grown up in the streets or near the streets to be able to go up in the countryside like that is, and, you know, as part of a fighting event. So I hope you can bring some kids up there and really give them that experience too.
Yeah, definitely. There's always a lot of criticism about, you know, this town, that city, how bad it is. Everybody talks about how bad it is, but nobody's putting the effort to make it better, you know what I mean? And pretty much we took a step as a team to try to help ourselves and help people around us. So, it's easier said than done, but we're actually doing what we said we was going to do, and that's a good feeling, you know?
Tell us a little bit, too, about the actual gym. I mean, what are the facilities like? Where is it exactly in Lawrence? And
The facility is called Intense Mixed Martial Arts Academy. It's on 83 Holly Street in Lawrence, Mass. We're on the second floor, right off Route 28. Our doors are open to everybody. You know, all's welcome. Actually, our grand open is May 1st on Saturday. We're having a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu seminar by Brazilian top team Carlos Neto. And then we're having a ribbon-cutting ceremony by Lawrence Mayor Mantigua and Methuen Mayor Manzi. They'll be in attendance as well. And we'll also have our fighters be in attendance. Some are our pro fighters, some are amateur fighters will be in attendance as well. And David George from Combat Zone, who was a big help in helping me put this all together, as well as Jimmy James and the rest of the fight team. You know, Calvin Cater, Dan Keith, Tyson Akel, Ivan Sanchez, Jose Figueroa. I got Jared Dumas, you know. We got some good guys, man. My partner, who pretty much is my right-hand man, George Espinoza. So we came up with the idea, and, you know, and we put it into work, you know. Everybody, like I said, you know, people talk about it. But till you do something about it, you know what I mean? Talk is nothing. And pretty much we put out all our words into action.
Well,
so hopefully everything's, you know, so far everything looks positive every day. You know, it's going to be a rough road at the beginning. We all know that, but we're sticking together as a team. And as a team, we can make it through it, you know.
Cool. And do you guys plan to do anything locally for an event in Lawrence?
Excuse me?
Do you guys plan to do anything locally in Lawrence as far as an event goes?
Yeah, the Combat Zone is usually, which is Salem, New Hampshire. They usually hold most events in Salem, New Hampshire, which holds a capacity of about 1,200. But since the MMA thing's getting so big in our area, so he went to a bigger venue, which will hold, you know, a bigger capacity of people, because most of his events are usually sold out and there's people outside waiting to get in. So, you know, summertime's big, you know, bike week's big, and we figure, you know, it's a big opportunity, and let's just make it happen. And with a bunch of good guys, you can make good things happen, and that's pretty much what we got on our team, a bunch of solid dudes, and it's looking good. And, you know, only thing else, we can just leave it up to God, and it's pretty much we're just doing what we have to do.
Right. And what kind of interest are you getting as far as, you know, people wanting to train there and... As far as the local,
I got a lot of local police officers who are interested in training here as well. I had about four local police officers show up. They donated a couple of a little bit of equipment. Pretty much, you know, with their presence, you know, make the younger guys feel a lot safer. You know, there's some guys that are intimidated by gyms when they walk in because they, you know, they're not from that background, but would like to be part of it. And you know, sometimes with a little police presence, it'll comfort them. But us that are born fighters, pretty much, you know, could care less. But you know, to accommodate everybody around us, we let everybody get involved. You know, it doesn't matter sex, race, or color. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's welcome, and that's how it is. We're just one big family.
All right. Well, that's awesome. Anybody else want to pipe in with a story about the gym?
Well, you could tell them about the. We're gonna sometime in the future we might have a cage in here. We got a facility where we lift weights. We got punching bags. You know, we got we got the changing room, bathroom. We got mats on the floor. We got
treadmills,
elliptical, bikes. We got
speed bags.
Got it all. You know,
fires.
It's just the beginning. You know, a lot of people are helping out. Some people are donating things. You know, it's coming across very well. You know. And everybody comes up in here and they give, you know, all these guys that are keeping it real, they get up there 100%, you know. Everybody goes home happy. You know, just look forward to the next day. Take it one day at a time, you know.
Right.
And, you know, we're trying to be gladiators, you know. You know, and we're doing very, I think we're doing very well. This is just the beginning.
All right. Well, we definitely appreciate having you guys on here. Anybody want to give shout-outs? We've got 7 more minutes with you guys here. So if you want to give shout-outs and just talk to people about, you know, what's going on as far as the grand opening and how they get involved in the gym.
Yes, for everybody out there locally, you know, statewide, nearby states, you know, May 1st, come down, check us out. Saturday, our grand opening at 10 a.m., 2-hour Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu seminar by Carlos Neto from Brazilian Top Team. Come check us out. Both mayors from Lawrence and Methuen will be in attendance. You know, I want to give a shout-out to David George and Combat Zone for all their contributions and helping us put this together. Everybody else locally, Jose Figueroa. My family who's been behind me, the rest of the team, Intense Fight Team, pretty much all the local, my coach, Bumpy Martinez, the legend, Giselle Martinez, Daisy Martinez, pretty much everybody around me, man. I wish I could name everybody, but be out here for a couple hours.
Anybody else want to say anything?
Hey, Kyle, you on there?
Yeah, what's up? I'm here.
What's up? You want to give a shout-out?
Yeah, shout-out to Jose Madera and founded Defense MMA. And Dave George. You know, you guys down there at the fight. Get down there. Get in the gym. Don't be scared.
Yeah, get your tickets. Also, we'll be selling tickets at Intense MMA Academy. Tickets will be on sale tomorrow for Combat Zone 33. Come check out Calvin Cater. With Fatal Santiago, Ivan Sanchez making his Emmy debut, Jared Dumas, Tyson Aku, and Dan the Ghost Keith. We're going out there, you know, we're going to kick some ass, and we're trying to come out of there 6-0, 5-0, whatever it takes, we're going to do it. We got that no-quit policy, you know what I'm saying? We don't believe in quitting, and we're trying to bring all those wins home with us.
All right. Wow, you guys have been great. You know, it was a very smooth interview for five people.
I appreciate you having us on. You know, we all appreciate it, you know. On behalf of Intense MMA, we appreciate you guys having us on. And, you know, I just want to say that, you know what I mean, for a lot of any young kids out there listening, you know what I mean, before you pick up that gun and do something ignorant, you know, think about yourself, not only yourself but your family, because you're not hurting only yourself but your family and others. And there's more to it than just picking up a gun, you know what I'm saying? If you're that frustrated, go in the gym, go hit the bag, let out some stress. And who knows, go in the gym, you can even meet somebody and talk to them, and hopefully somebody can comfort you in a way that, you know, take away that aggression from you. But if you're that aggressive, go in the gym, hit the bag, put the mitts on, spar with somebody, you know what I mean? But it's a lot more to it in life than just picking up a gun and taking the next guy's life, man. Pretty much that's our motto, guns down, knuckle up, you know what I'm saying? There's nothing worse than taking another man's life and leaving them, you know, leaving that person's family with the burden of losing, you know, that significant other for some nonsense in the street when it's not that serious, you know what I mean? If you want to pick up a gun, go join the army. They can use you, you know what I mean, in the war somewhere, you know what I mean? But it's not that serious in the street when you're killing fellow friends. Because most people that kill, usually you kill somebody that you know what I'm saying? So if it's that serious, man, go in the gym, punch your bag, you know what I'm saying, put the mitts on and spar with somebody. You know, come down in the tents, Calvin's nine, and spar with somebody to punch him in his face. So come down, you know what I mean, 83 Holly Street, Lawrence, Mass.
All right. Well, it was great having you guys on, and, you know, we will definitely try to make it by there. I'm the Massachusetts guy on the show here, so.
Oh, definitely, man. You're more than welcome.
I'll try to make it up there sometime, and if I don't see it before the show, I'll see you at the show. That's definitely something I'm not going to miss, so. We will meet in person, that's for sure.
All right, definitely.
You guys keep up the good work. I love helping out any kind of charity work or, you know, anything along these lines where you're trying to do some good in the community, so. We'll definitely pump up anything you guys get going. Keep in touch.
All right. All right, thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys. Everybody.
All right,
thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Good luck, guys.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
Okay.
Well.
So we basically, you know, we went through those five guests pretty quickly there and right on schedule. Half an hour, 40 minutes almost. But we got Steve Martin coming up next. And Steve, actually, while we're waiting to hook up Steve here, I wanted to tell you, Tony, you know, I did the interview of Reggie Johnson way back when. I don't know if you ever saw
Yeah, I remember that.
Like one of those good interviews I did way back when I was doing the MySpace and just a couple other freelance stuff. Well, Reggie's in jail now, could you believe?
Saw that,
so
he sent me.
So we're trying to help him out, and I guess he's got a hearing on May 7th. So if anybody's in the Texas area and they do pro bono criminal legal work, Reggie Johnson's a great boxer, a great light heavyweight boxer. He needs some help, so I'm going to try to help him as much as I can, but I haven't seen any court documents yet or read the whole deal. The only thing that I did see online was somebody had written an article about it saying that he was accused of taking money for a boxing gym or for a boxing camp that never happened. So I don't know what the deal is with that. I'd like to talk to Reggie, but I don't know if I can accept to collect calls from my Skype phone. And, you know, I'm communicating with somebody who has his email address and says she's his friend. So maybe we'll have some information on that on a future show, but we definitely want to put it out there if anybody's listening and access. Get a hold of Reggie or me at info@unlimitedfightnews.com or rich@unlimitedfightnews.com and I can connect you to Reggie. That would be nice to help him out. Whatever the story is, I don't know. But I know Reggie's a good guy, so I don't believe it. Steve Martin, we're going to have on in a minute here, is the BePositiveProject.com creator and founder. He's got a lot of good ideas. He's going to donate a portion of his products to the Tony Palermo Memorial Fund for his plaque and his scholarship. So we're going to have him on in just a second here. They got you know, a lot of great products, especially if you're Irish. They got a nice Be Irish shirt. Everything's revolves around the letter, of course.
Hello,
Steve.
Hey, what's happening, Rich?
How's it going? I have my co-host on the line here, Tony the Tornado Kanakal.
Yo, Tony the Tornado Kanakal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Tony, how you doing?
Doing good. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing alright.
You thought you were the comedian, Steve Martin.
I wish. What are you guys trying to, increase your ratings? Is that why you have me on? You guys think I'm a comedian?
Well, that was the first thing you said. Because we're talking to Steve Martin. I said, from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and the Three Amigos.
Yep, you got him.
But I've been telling people a little bit about what you actually do, the BePositiveProject.com.
Sure.
Little deal. You know, your motive, your slogan here, be inspired, be motivated, be positive. And then you give 50% of your profit to some kind of a good charity or you know, something that the community needs. So I told everybody that you stepped up in a big way to help Tony's plaque. You were at the event, so you know, tell us what your impression of the whole thing was.
Oh, I thought the event was great. I was actually really surprised at how well attended it was and how, you know, that was actually my first boxing event that I ever attended, so I was impressed, and I wish we could have helped out a little bit more, but hopefully for future events we can get more involved.
Yeah, they had a meeting today, and they're actually trying to get Bobby's team to come back up in October or November, so...
Oh, excellent.
It's like, you know, they're salivating for the next one.
Oh, really?
They want it to happen now, but, you know, actually the FDNY team has a deal where they're going up against the NYPD on October 1st, which is my birthday.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to actually get down there and see it in person and, you know, be involved whenever I can.
Oh, cool.
While promoting it and stuff, and that's at Madison Square Garden down there. And then hopefully they'll come up here at the end of the month or maybe early November again. And I'll actually be on that card because I definitely want to fight this time. They almost called me in to fight at the last minute because some fights fell through. And, you know, so I got back to training for like a half a week. And, you know, I would have done it, but I probably wouldn't have done as well as I would now that I'm in the mode and training and getting ready to go. So definitely I'll wear something Be Positive into the ring for you.
Yeah, so we'll get you some good gear. We'll get you a Be Motivated shirt.
Nice. It's definitely, I was real surprised to learn, you know, you're a local guy with this company. You know, I'm surprised I haven't heard about it sooner, really, more than anything.
Well, you know, we're fairly new. Started it in June of 2009. Started kind of just messing around with just some friends, throwing a couple of events here and there, and every event that we did, we geared it towards, you know, a charity. And then back in probably, I'd say December or January, we kind of rolled out the apparel line, the t-shirts. And you know, things have been going pretty well since. And in summary, we're an apparel company that is socially responsible, and we give back to a charity, and we have our events that we run. And if you go on the website, we're, you know, we want to promote any organization out there that's doing good things. So we're building up a network, an ever-growing network of positive organizations that are doing good things in the community. And hopefully we can co-brand with them with our T-shirt line and, you know, send a message to, you know, to their people, their following. And, you know, hopefully through this project, we can start giving back and helping people at the same time of, you know, spending money that you normally would be spending, you know?
Right. And you also are an Norwich graduate, right?
Correct. 2001.
All right. So, you know, we have that in common. You're on the civilian side?
I was a nasty civilian.
No. That's your term. I'm not. I always got civilians. We actually, we had one guy that used to sit with us at the mess hall who was on the civilian side and had nothing to do with the Corps ever. Usually if it's that,
I'm surprised you guys let him over there.
Yeah, we did. I don't know what the story about how he ended up there, but it was kind of funny. He used to go to a lot of parties, and he was always there, so maybe that's why.
But
anyway.
Yeah, it was a good time. I met a lot of good people up there.
Yeah. Did you major in business now, or did you just kind of fall into that after?
No, I actually majored in business. I played football up there for 4 years, and it was a great experience. I met a lot of good people.
So then I I must have seen you play football in one of those years, because I was there in 99. If you were on all 4 years, graduated in 2001, I definitely saw you up there. Whether it was passing. And of course, you know, if anybody heard anything about me up there, it was always had something to do with me falling off the roof.
I was going to say, it had to be something that you getting in trouble.
Yeah, you're getting in trouble. Well, I got in trouble a lot, but. I only got punished a couple times.
Yeah.
When I went to Virginia Military Institute, they had a little system. They used to call it the game, you know, because you could get the Blue Book regulations. You could get busted for that, but there were privileges that you had as a class, you know, like as a junior, you could wear your bathrobe around the barracks, you know, some stupid like that. But that was against Blue Book regulations, so it was like, you know, if you got caught, you had to get demerits, but they called it the game because you were supposed to try not to get caught. So I was good at that in Norwich, even more than I was at VMI.
I think that's part of graduating from Norwich is you have to get in trouble because, you know, it's very strict, obviously.
Yeah.
But.
Well, it was funny, my senior year.
It makes it fun at the same time, you know?
My senior year was probably the most out of control I ever was up there. You know, I went to so many parties and drank so much in my room. It was crazy. You know, we were a dry campus at that point, and now they serve alcohol on campus.
Right, I know. Yeah, I went back this past homecoming, and they had a bar on campus.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Which was pretty surprising, since they actually kicked people out for drinking back when I was there.
Yeah. Okay. I had, like, one of the closest rooms to the administration hall, and we had, like, a 30 pack in the fridge every night, so we lived dangerously.
As far as I know, my alma mater still has the LCB in town. That was because I was there in 1998.
What did you say, Tony?
I went to Lock Haven University down in central Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It was I boxed up there for 4 years. I almost boxed Rich in the national finals in 1998. And that year, I mean, the year that, you know, most fun I've ever had. Best year I've had boxing on the team, but I also lived in, like, the most popular house off of campus, and we were, like, the anti-fraternity, so we would just have party after party after party, take away all their business. Everybody hated us. It was great. And then we got busted. That was December of 97. LCB came into town, and they're still, you know, hanging around there. I mean, a lot of things happened in Lock Haven afterwards. I mean, this is after I graduated. Like a year later, there was something with the football player over a drug deal. This kid got murdered or something.
They showed it on America's Most Wanted. They're interviewing the one guy. He's the guy I'm in class with. I knew him. So I'm like, yeah, my locker room really, really was a lot of trouble going on. So they had to shape it up. But I remember it was like a couple months after I graduated, and I was, you know, 22, 23. I came back up, and we went to the boxing matches one night, and afterwards, you know, we all went to the one bar. And this is a bar for the longest time. Basically, they didn't check IDs. I remember sitting there the one night with a friend of mine from Kentucky. Right after the Boston matches.
About those places at the mall.
We're at this, we're sitting at the bar after the boxing matches, and the one kid from Kentucky's like, hey, you boxing in the East-West Classic in Reno in a few weeks? I said, yeah, I am. He goes, oh, man, he goes, after the fights are over, we're going to have the biggest party. And he goes, and that's the weekend of my 21st birthday. The bartender looked at him. I'm like, Jeremy, shut the fuck up. You know, you're going to get yourself busted here. Well, a year later, you know, I graduated. I mean, I was already 21, so it didn't matter. When I graduated, I came back for a couple boxing matches, and we all went to this bar again. And I'm in there, and we're all sitting there having a good time. Next thing you know, the LCB came in. They boarded all the doors, and they started carding everybody. So they come up to me, and I'm like, whoa, didn't you know I'm a legend in this town? They're like, we don't care who you are. Show us your ID. So I show my ID. I was, you know, 22, 23. Then I went to another room, and I'm sitting there, you know, talking to a couple friends of mine, and my dad was there that night because he came up for the boxing matches. And then the one guy comes to me again, like, can I see your ID? I'm like, didn't I just show it to you assholes in the other room? They're like, yeah, okay. And then there's this one kid there. He was, I guess, around 21, 22, and he made a smart-ass comment to my dad. He goes, hey, old man, did they ask me to check your ID? Next thing you know, we all started ripping him so bad that the guy left in tears.
My best story about one of those places where they don't check your ID.
Hello?
Military Institute.
Still there? Can you hear us? Yeah, I'm here.
Oh.
I can really hear Ratchet.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Is that better?
Yep.
Right. Well, I was saying the best story I had about one of those places that don't check IDs. We were down in Virginia, and it was just me and one other Norwich guy at the time. It was the other two were girls because they were trying to bring women in for the first semester at Virginia Military Institute. That's why we were down there to be advisors. So we get down there and you know, we're out on the town, and the place to go was this little Chinese restaurant. Seems like it's always a Chinese restaurant, but they were like American waitresses. It was a big place, and you know, they never check IDs. So we go to this place, and on the way back, this kid that we were with from VMI says, you know, it's an old tradition for us to go over to this private school over here, Washington Lee University, that Robert E. Lee is actually buried on campus, the Union, or the general from the Confederate side. Robert E. Lee is buried right next to his horse on campus. But anyway, the tradition is to go piss on this statue's shoes. The statue is of Cyrus McCormick, the original inventor of the cotton gin, supposedly. So they go, we got to go piss on Cyrus, you know. And it was just the statue, actually, not the shoes. The shoes came in later because I was so drunk, I was convinced that I couldn't just piss on the pedestal of the statue. I had to piss on Cyrus's shoes. So I had my prop me up onto the platform of the statue in the middle of the night, drunk off my ass, and I pissed all over his shoes. Just to be one up the tradition, you know. I had to do it one extra for Norwich. They pissed on his shoes. It was a lot of fun. But anyway, it's about us. Steve, tell us a little bit more about how you first started this company and, you know, what you got coming up as far as events and stuff.
Say that again, Rich. You kind of broke up a little bit.
I just wanted to see if you could tell us a little bit more about how you got started with this company, you know, and what you got coming up for events and all that.
Oh, sure. Actually, we have an event coming up this Wednesday on Cinco de Mayo at the Liberty Hotel. It's at actually the Alibi Bar and Patio. So come on down, celebrate the independence of Mexico. We're doing it. And so that's our next event we have coming up. Our big event that we do in the city of Boston is our Home Run Derby event. It's
Now, let's more. Funny and I are big baseball fans. That's how we first actually met after boxing.
Yeah, we're on our second annual event coming up. We have softball players from pretty much the entire state of Massachusetts come on down, register all, you know. We play at the Boston Common softball field, so it's a great location, great event. You get a pretty good, a lot of spectators come on down. It's a great event for even, you know, families to come on down and watch the event. And that's our biggest event. We do that around September. How I started this, like I said, I think I told you, Rich, just a bunch of friends and I were just wanted to throw a couple events, and I said, well, let's do it for a charity. And that was back in December of 2009 maybe, or let's see, 2008. And since then, we spun into not only events, but also the apparel line, which, you know, anyone out there that's looking to do any kind of fundraising for your organization, check us out. It's the letter B, positiveproject.com. Everything that we do is geared towards raising funds for a charity or a particular, we have, the website is full of positive news and information. We want to hire one that's doing good things in the community, so we have a hero section. We get all kinds of inspirational, motivational videos from, movies, Rocky movies, positive news stories going on throughout the country, inspirational quotes. So it's a pretty cool website. I encourage people to definitely check it out.
And you did have a special section there for Anthony Palermo. We appreciate that. My
pleasure.
The plaque project that she probably actually found out about us because of Norwich just stepped up so huge, and they got the word out to all of Anthony's classmates all over the world, really, and actually got a check on the way from Afghanistan. I was telling Tony earlier.
That's great.
And a lot of his, not only fellow classmates, but fellow servicemen, people who are in the service right now, are donating to the plaque in huge numbers. Not really huge numbers, but in a huge way. I mean, you got about a half dozen kids from Norwich, at least, who have given over $20, and two of them have given three of them now have given over $200. One gave $250, one gave $300, and one gave $500 the other day. The plaque.
Wow.
And this was a kid that, was just a classic Norwich guy. He was always pulling pranks when he was there. He was a funny guy.
Oh, yeah?
But, I know him going all the way back to junior ROTC. He was a Massachusetts guy, Jamie LaValle, his name is. He gave the $500. He's a kid from Bedford High School in Western Mass. And it was always at the drill meets and everything and the encampments that we used to have. And just a laugh riot, this kid. He was always doing some kind of a joke. And when I was a cadet, we didn't get too much of a chance to hang out that much, but I'd always see him. And I joked with a friend the other day. I said, probably he spent 90% of his free time in Norwich either pulling a prank, running away from it, or organizing.
Yeah, I know a few guys. Hey, that's what you gotta do up there, though.
Yeah, nothing else to do. It's in the middle of nowhere. So.
Yep.
The Green Mountains of Vermont. And speaking of that, actually, I reached out to Norwich, as I said, for the plaque, but one of the other things I wanted to do as a tribute was to do a ski hill run.
Yep, that's cool.
And Bill Pasalacqua, the alumni guy, is setting up Alumni Weekend for this year, which is going to be the second weekend in October. And, what a great weekend for a ski hill run. He said Sunday morning is open. And if we could do it Sunday morning, I think it's the 8th of October or the 9th of October that weekend.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. And, we could have a little party at the top. I already reached out to the guys from Blue Hills Brewery who did the VIP party there. They had some brew there that helped get me in the right mode for my tribute to Anthony. Took the edge off.
Oh, yeah?
Some, like, 9% brew that
they make India Pale Ale. It's like, oh, unbelievable stuff. But I had like two rum and cokes in one of those, and I was done. Great move for the night. But we're going to get him to be involved and whoever else we can and have a real big, nice event. And I was thinking, like, you know, we could do echo taps with one bugler at the top of the hill and one at the bottom of the hill. And do that at the top, and then we'll all walk down and go to breakfast or lunch or whatever. It's probably going to be lunch by that time. And, you know, have a toast to him at the top. And we used to run the hill every Friday, so you know how big that ski hill is.
Oh, yeah.
Some Fridays we'd run the long way up, and then other Fridays we'd run straight up the face of it. And
We hike up there during the wintertime and go snowboarding down it.
Oh, yeah. A lot of fun. I can't imagine what it must have been like when they actually had the ski hill running with the lifts and everything, but when I was there, you know, it was a great, great run. And all the kids hated it, but after it was done, they appreciated it every week.
Yeah.
One of my best days at practice was when we did the ski hill run and I gave all the kids beer. You know, all these freshmen at the end of the season, I said, we're going to have a party. You know, we're going to run the ski hill one last time. We're all going to come back and have some beer. And sure enough, the one kid who didn't want to participate ended up being the cadet colonel, the highest-ranking kid out of the whole Corps a couple years later.
Oh, yeah? There you go.
He was a tool about it. They used to call guys like him tools. He was like, I don't want to have any drinks. I can't be around this. You know, he had to leave.
Yeah.
But everybody else was cool with it. Anthony himself, I remember, was very laid back at the time. And when I talked to his parents before this event, they said that when he used to have his friends down from Norwich, they used to go down the basement. They had a heavy bag in the basement. So that's where Anthony used to do his practice, and that's where he used to go and get the kids beer if they wanted it. You know, they're old enough to go to military school. His parents said they're old enough to drink. They just keep it in the basement and not make any trouble. So it was used to that kind of thing. So that was kind of interesting because it just reminded me of that day. And, you know, they all appreciated that. I could have got thrown out of school for it if I got caught, so...
Right. Well,
the other kid, even though he was a tool, never told on me. Done that. But it was a great, great little group of guys, and I'm glad you were able to step up and help out with this. And I definitely will involve you in everything that we do going forward with it.
So yeah, no, that'd be wonderful. That'd be great.
I definitely think we can come up with a lot of ideas. Meredith Griffin, who's actually Tony's cousin, and also her husband is an MMA fighter. Who's in the Cage Effect circuit locally. They want to do a road race because they're always running for fitness. So that's another thing in the back burner that we're going to try to put.
Yeah, I mean, another thing to tell our listeners is any charity event that they do or you do, we would love to come there with our products. Sell our products on their behalf, and everything we sell, we give $5 to their charities. And every product we sell, we donate $5 back. And it's, you know, people like our products, and that's what's great about it.
Yeah, I get to actually see one of the shirts, except for the one you were wearing one the other day, right?
Yes, I was wearing a Be Motivated one. I think we got to get in there for the next event, man. I'm telling you, we could raise a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, definitely. You know, if I can make it happen, I will.
Okay.
That was one of those things that they kind of took me out of. You know, they didn't let me be involved in, unfortunately. But
yeah, I know I shot you a message a week, you know, a couple of days before the event. So I mean, we would try to make it a win-win for everyone. That's what it's all about.
But tell us a little bit about the actual products. I know I told Tony and everybody beforehand we got the B Irish shirt. Everything goes by something with the lowercase B.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit more about some of the other styles you got going.
Yes. So basically, the brand that we've created is a lowercase B. And around the B, it has the words mind, body, soul, and heart. And whenever you see somebody wearing that B, it means that they're doing good for somebody else. Because when they bought that B, when they bought that shirt or that product, proceeds from that to a good cause.
So just as, you know, Nike has their Just Do It, you know, ours is when you see somebody wearing the B, it means they're doing good for someone else. And so what we've done is any organization, most organizations, you know, whether it be a high school sports team, a college group, or any organization, has a word or a phrase that kind of they want to instill into their members or their employees or their teammates. When I was in college, it was, you know, dedication, you know, so be dedicated. Any word that summarizes your group. So what we've done is we tailor the shirts, you know, based on that group's, mission. And then we come up with a really cool quote, and we customize our products with, you know, their logos, their colors. And it's really a shirt that, you know, you can be proud of when you wear. And when you're wearing that shirt, you feel good. You feel good knowing that you're making a difference in someone else's life. And you feel good because it's usually a positive word, you know. So you get something, you know, be motivated, or, you know, be strong, or be dedicated, or, you know, be ambitious. So, you know, the product line is very robust, I'm excited. You know, this is, like I said, we started this in June of 2009, but we haven't really rolled out a product until December, and it's, we're 4 months into it, and things are going very well. It's a good thing, you know. It's one of those things where I can be passionate about it. In my past life, my career, I was a real estate consultant, developer, and I just never got any kind of satisfaction from what I was doing. And, I started this, and it's like, you know, this is what life is all about. It's all about helping other people. And if I can do that and, you know, support my family at the same time, but also give back, I mean, that's the most successful thing that someone can do.
Yeah, that should be the American dream, you know.
Yep.
So, you know, most people just want to make money. That's it. Yeah, you got to give back. And one of the reasons why this whole Battle of the Badges thing came together, because the guy who started the whole promotional part of it, Brian D., he's got a whole bunch of other charities going on. And,
yep.
You know, he made a lot of money on credit cards and capitalism. And
yep.
He looked at it and he said, you know, I want to do some good for society. So he started this scientific social solutions company. And, you know, they got
the
thing going.
I'd love to get involved with him some way, shape, or form. They do some good synergy there. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's okay to want to make money. But there's no reason why, you know, CEOs, you know, $500 million a year and, you know, and the next town over there's people hungry, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, and I believe in capitalism. If someone's smart enough to know how to, you know, make money, then they should be paid for it accordingly. But I also believe that, you know, it's good to give back. So
I think part of it, too, is people don't realize how good it feels to give back. You know,
absolutely.
Something on a community basis, they never get that feeling of what it's like.
Right. That's a great point. The feeling that I get when, you know, these kids will send us thank you letters, hey, you know, this past St. Patrick's Day, we sent 35 kids from the Starlight Children's Foundation to a Celtics game. And, after the game, a week later, you know, letters from either the kids or the parents, you know, saying, hey, thank you for, you know, letting us bring our family to the event. And, you know, that's what it's all about. That's when it starts to feel really good. But, you know, a lot of the times people don't know how to give back, you know. Really, the only way that people know how to give back is by, you know, donating their money. And unfortunately, sometimes it can be a little, you know, skeptical because you don't know where those funds are going. So if you know, the Be Positive Project can create a platform where it can turn consumers into philanthropists without really affecting their lifestyle by, you know, participating in one of a third party that posted their events on our website, or, you know, buying one of our products and giving back, or just us promoting a service
or another organization that's giving back to society. So it creates a platform for them to really get involved, you know?
Yeah. And it gives everybody a reason to pay it forward in a lot of ways, too, you know?
Exactly.
It provides a good example of, you know, a company that is doing what you do and doing all right with it. And I do also see that you brought your son to the event, and you involve your son in a lot of the stuff. I see him on your Facebook page there. What's that like, being able to get your family behind you in that?
I can't say enough about that little boy. I don't know. I'm just so proud of him. He's awesome. He's everything.
What did he think of the event?
He loved it. He's actually a big MMA fan. He's only 4 years old, but he loves it. I've been wrestling with him since he was born.
Wow.
And he loves to wrestle, and he loves watching MMA on TV. And I figured, I was a little hesitant about bringing him to the event. I got to be honest with you. Got a few questions from people that I know. Are you serious? You're bringing him to the boxing match? But you know, I look at it as it's competition, you know, and he loved it. So, but at, you know, of course, it got a little late at 9 o'clock. 9:30 started acting up, so I had to bring him home. So I actually didn't get to see, the main event. I think we stayed for about maybe 7 or 8 matches, and then we split.
Oh, that's all right. The fight of the night was actually, I don't know if you saw the Velasquez versus Garen. The kid from New York almost got knocked out, and the ref gave him a standing 8 count, and he finished the fight.
Is that when they threw the towel in?
No. I think that was afterwards. But that was funny. That was like the best ref reaction when they threw the towel in.
What was up with that?
Whipped it back. He was like, you didn't want it in there.
Yeah. I thought that was a little premature, but
yeah, that kid wasn't really in great shape though. What did you
say? Yeah, I mean, but then again, I'm not a ref, so.
Well, that was great that you brought your son, and he loved it. If you like MMA, I'm telling you, there's a great big event going on May 21st, and I know Tony's going to want to talk about this when he hears it. I know he's a hockey fan too, but. The great Butterbean, Eric Butterbean Esch, is fighting our great Boston hockey player of old, Lyndon Byers.
Oh, no kidding.
In a match for charity. And I wish I knew about this a week ago, because guess what the charity is?
What is it?
It's a slain Boston police officer. So it would have fit perfectly with the Battle of the Badges, but...
Oh, yeah.
Until this week when they started promoting it. But Butterbean is going against Byers.
That'd be pretty interesting to watch.
And I bet they're promoting the crap out of it on WAAF, because LB is on the morning show there. They call it Butterbean.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Mickey Ward was at the event the other night, and supposedly Mickey Ward is the one who's training LB. So.
Oh, wow. Where's that going to be?
It's going to be at the DCU Center in Worcester.
I got two questions, Rich.
Yeah.
First of all, when are we getting Mickey Ward on the show?
I gave him a business card.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was talking about, because I didn't tell you that.
His gym.
But with regards to Butterbean, Butterbean used to be a lot of fun to watch as a boxer. You know, hey, he worked hard. He started off as a tough man. He was over 400 pounds. He was just getting in shape. Got himself down to, like, around 310-ish. And, I mean, he was still a big guy. He was still a heavy guy, but he wasn't doing bad. But when he started getting up to around 370, 400-plus pounds, you could tell that, you know, the effort wasn't in it anymore. Now, I went to a tough man competition. It wasn't a tough man competition. It was a boxing card. But the promoter that did it, he did a lot of, you know, gimmicks on there, and the one gimmick was Butterbean versus a local tough man. I think they were fighting three-minute rounds, I'm not 100% sure, but this guy, who was a Philadelphia police officer with no professional fights, and the only reason I knew of him, because he beat a cousin of mine in the Philadelphia tough man like a year or so prior,
and basically a tough man with no professional boxing experience, literally beat the shit out of Butterbean for 3 rounds. Just jabbed, moved, jabbed and moved. And now, this is actually going to kind of work well. He's going into hockey player now. So it's not like you're going to see a hockey player do a lot of jabbing and moving and, you know, a lot of fanciful stuff. He's going to fight a in-your-face brawl, which benefits Butterbean. I mean, I'm picking Butterbean to win this one just because of his, you know.
Jersey. Then he's in trouble.
If he's wearing a what jersey?
A hockey jersey. You know, they
grab I know. He's got something to grab onto.
You're going to pull the guy towards you.
Maybe we'll capitalize on the round two of the NHL playoffs. We'll get Butterbean an extra large Flyers jersey.
Yeah, that's the other thing I wanted to talk to Tony about. You know, Tony's from Philadelphia, Steve.
Okay.
So now we're in the Boston Bruins are going against the Philly Flyers, right?
Yep.
So we got to talk some smack about our Bruins.
I'm a huge Bruins fan now that they're in the playoffs, let me tell you.
I've only been a one Bruins team in my life, and it was at the New Garden, first time I ever went to the New Garden. So
I really don't think I could talk smack because I don't know too much about the Bruins, to be honest with you.
All I can say is they got a Bergeron on there.
I know Richard's writing an email that he wants them to play the Canadians because it'd be a Bergeron versus Bergeron. And I said, no. You know, let's get ahead of ourselves there, Rich. Now, come on.
That's how little I know about hockey.
I stopped watching hockey when Cam Neely and Adam Oates and all those guys retired.
Yeah, actually, one of the last times I remember watching the Stanley Cup playoffs was when Ray Bourque won it.
Ray Bourque, yep.
Colorado.
All right. Steve, let's hit Rich with a trivia question here. I have a feeling you know the answer, but I want to see how good Rich is. Okay, Rich, here you go. Name a movie that Cam Neely was in.
I got it.
About Mary? I know there was a football player in that. So.
It was Brett Favre was in it, but I don't think Cam Neely was in that one.
No. Cam Neely. Had to be then one of those brothers from Rhode Island, one of the Coen brothers.
There you go. You're close.
Was that maybe Fairley Brothers? I don't remember. I mean, it was that long ago.
That was definitely the Farley Brothers.
Yeah.
Cam Neely?
I don't know. I don't know what the movie is, but I know it's definitely a comedy.
I'm ready, Rich?
Yeah, go ahead.
Check his head, Seabass.
Still don't know.
You've never seen Dumb and Dumber?
Oh, all right.
Is there a sea bass? Cam Neely was sea bass.
He was also, wasn't he gay in that movie?
Yeah, I remember because he was trying to molest Jim Carrey in the end.
Wow, a lot of people didn't get that. They were portraying Cam Neely as being gay in that movie. Sea bass, I should say. His character sea bass was,
Well, you stopped me there.
It's
probably been like 10 years since I've seen that.
They run it right now. But talking about hockey goons, there's one player, he never broke the NHL, I don't think, but he played for the Flyers minor league affiliate, the Philadelphia Phantoms. His name's a...
You there, Tony? Is this you? Hello? Anybody there? Hello? Hang on, folks. We'll get everything under control here in a second. Okay, we're back. So
sorry about that interruption.
Take three.
Yeah, right? What is that? I don't know what that is. We're getting Steve back here, too.
Okay.
That's a recall into Blog Talk Radio and everything.
Hey, it's Katie. I can't get to my phone right now, so if you leave a message, I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thank you. Bye.
Record your message after the time.
That must be whoever's phone Steve was using.
Well, I'll tell you right now, I'm going to tell the story anyway, and if Steve gets back on, he can hear it. We're talking about hockey. We're talking about hockey goons. And you didn't know that Cam Neely was in Dumb and Dumber, but we're talking about hockey goons, and the one, the Philadelphia Flyers, they have like a minor league team, you know, like their affiliate, the Philadelphia Phantoms. The one guy on there was a goon for years, Frank the Animal Bialowis. Well, he got into the field of professional boxing. I think he only had like two fights, but the guy that made his trunks was the same guy that used to make all my boxing.
Ah, cool.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, it's Kate.
Tony?
Yeah?
Oh, you're still there. All right.
Yeah, I'm still here.
I guess Steve thinks we abandoned him. We're sorry, Steve.
Sorry, Steve.
You?
Rich did it.
The Skype system just shit the bed on me. Farted up post, I guess.
you'll kind of like this. I don't know if I ever told you this one. Guy that used to make all my boxing gear, this guy, Frank LaRosa out of South Philadelphia, the Italian market. He really started to get well known after he made the gear for this hockey player, Frank Bialowis. So a couple fighters would go down there and they'd have them, you know, make their trunks and stuff. And I forget the reason why my two friends were down there. They're both boxing officials. They're referees and judges. Gary Rosado and Bernard Bruni. They've been friends of mine for years. Gary Rosado was one of the first guys to get the boxing program kickstarted at Lock Haven 30 years ago.
So they were down in the Italian market. There was a big fight at the Spectrum that night. It was about 6-7 years ago. So they stopped in this Triple Play Sports, and the guy that runs it, this guy Frank LaRosa, he goes, "Hey guys, check this out. Check out what I got. Entrusted in making." And there he holds up is the trunks and robes for a Philadelphia fighter that was fighting at the Spectrum that night. You ever hear of Bernard Hopkins?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, the guy that used to make all my trunks and stuff was making the outfits for Bernard Hopkins. I mean, I thought that was pretty cool.
There you go. Well, there's a lot of boxing news we can talk about here. We're just going to say so long to Steve. Unfortunately, we dropped the call. We're sorry, Steve.
Sorry, Steve.
Sure, he's got better, more important stuff to do than chit-chat with us, so thanks for stopping by, Steve, and sorry we couldn't end on a real formal note, but we'll be in touch, and we'll have some stuff on the blog, too, about Steve. I just revamped the unlimitedfightnews.com splash page today, so if you log in through unlimitedfightnews.com and then click enter here to get to the blog, you can see Steve's little heroes emblem on the left-hand side now. So we're also going to put something like that on the blog itself. We hooked him up with a little slot on AnthonyPalermoMemorial.info. So check that out for Steve. We do have a lot of boxing and MMA to cover. Robert Guerrero's back in action. I wanted to mention that because his wife had leukemia, and there's a real human interest story that he's stepped out and gave up his title and everything to spend some time with his wife. And now he's coming back. He's not wasting any time getting back into the mix. He's fighting a 10-rounder. With Roberto David Arrieta, who's 35-15 with 17 knockouts and 4 draws. So he's getting right back into the mix. He's being promoted by Miguel Cotto and Golden Boy Promotions. So that's pretty interesting. It's going to be on Telefuture on this Friday. That's going to be the main event. Guerrero's 25-1 with 17 knockouts and 1 draw. Let's see what else we got. Marco Hawk is fighting Brian Minto this weekend for the WBO Cruiserweight title. What?
Minto's dropping down from heavyweight to cruiserweight.
Yeah. Another guy we interviewed way back in the day, Tommy Carpensi. I think we interviewed him, or else I just remember hearing that name. 19.
Tommy Carpensi? Isn't he the kid that beat Chuck Masaccio?
Oh, maybe. Yeah, that's probably where I heard his name. He's fighting Carl Marat at light heavyweight, who's 21-0 with 13 knockouts. Carpensi is 19-1, 1 draw and 12 knockouts.
Yeah, that's the kid that beat Chuck Masaccio.
That bad.
Just kidding. What I'm trying to do is trying to arrange my work schedule that I can go to Chuck's fight June 4th in Bally's in Atlantic City. It's tough because, I'm at a job now because we only had 2 people in the office taking all the calls. So, and I'm the one with less seniority. So by that, a lot of times I can't get out. It's like, say, you had something, it's like, hey, can you take a half day today? Not so easy. Like next week, I'm going to be slightly stupider when we talk next week on the show. I'm getting a wisdom tooth out.
Oh boy.
I will be less wise. That's what they actually want to do my appointment Thursday in the afternoon. I'm like, I gotta do a show Thursday night. I don't wanna lose my streak, which is 2.5 years almost. the one thing I do want to talk about, we got the big fight this weekend, Mayweather Mosley. For all of you that are on Fight News Unlimited, check out my article. I go pretty in-depth on it. I added a new piece of the article this time, which is the keys to victory. I never really put that on there, and then I felt like something was missing because I was trying to tell people why so-and-so would win or why the fight would turn out this way. And I was like, well, I really need to put on there what a person needs to do to win that fight. And for Mosley to win this fight, he's got to neutralize Mayweather's tremendous speed. The 2 ways I think he has to do it is by 1 is jabbing to the body and torso, not the head. The because Mayweather's too quick, his reflexes are too good. You got to land that glove on flesh. Jab him in the shoulder, jab him in the chest, back him up, and that's going to take him off balance.
Well, other thing is, I don't want to interrupt, but I'm going to. This weekend, I was talking to two gals who actually knew their boxing at the bar, at the after party. And I was telling the one girl that asked me what I thought about Mayweather versus Mosley, that I really think Mosley's going to be the guy that's going to be smart enough to know to hit Floyd in the shoulder, like I was saying. You know, hit him in the shoulder so he can't do that shoulder roll as well. I don't know if anybody's really tried to do that.
Rocky, De La Hoya did a little bit. De La Hoya did, and you could see when he was jabbing Mayweather in the body and the torso, which was very effective because he backed him up, and he was landing on flesh. And you could look at Mayweather's face around that 7th, 8th round. He was a little hurt, and he was a little confused. And then De La Hoya stopped after the 8th round. And I think brother Nazeem Richardson, who is Mosley's trainer, is smart enough that he's watching that film over and over. Because the two closest times you came to see Mayweather losing were when he had that first fight with Jose Luis Castillo. And that was because, you know, he had hurt his hands in that fight. And then against Oscar De La Hoya, because De La Hoya was able to, at times, back him up. And De La Hoya could have won that fight if he didn't take rounds 9 through 11 off. If he didn't stop and let Mayweather get the momentum back, De La Hoya may not just have beaten him, he may have knocked him out. Now the question is, can Mosley, because the styles that Mosley's had the most trouble with are when guys are able to outbox him. That's why Vernon Forrest beat him. I mean, okay, Forrest caught him in the first fight, and he stunned him, and Mosley never recovered. But the second fight, Forrest used his jab and his superior range to keep Mosley at bay, and that's why he beat him. I thought Mosley lost the second De La Hoya fight because over the first 8 rounds, De La Hoya used his jab to keep him at bay, and Mosley didn't catch up to him until about the 9th round. And then the fights with Winky Wright. Winky Wright was able to use a real good defense and boxing ability to keep Mosley bay and use his jab a lot. That's the thing for Mayweather, is to keep Mosley on the outside and stay a step ahead of him. But Mosley, to counteract that, like I said, the two things. One, jab and hit him in the torso, back him up, get him off balance where he's on his heels. The second thing is the feint. Mayweather is a great counterpuncher. He is. The way to beat a counterpuncher is you either punch with them or you force them to commit. So you got to use a feint. So it's like, say me and you're fighting, and I want you to throw first so I can counter you. Well, you're waiting for me to punch so you can counter me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to feint, make you punch and counter a punch that really hasn't come, and then counter your counter. That's the whole way to beat a counterpuncher, is to make them go first. And the way to do that is by feinting. So what Mosley has to do is jab the torso, open up the body attack, and use feints. Mayweather, he's got to use his foot speed. He's got to use his reflexes. He's got to keep the fight in the center of the ring. Because the closer it is inside, let's face it, facts are facts. Mosley is a bigger, stronger guy. He hits harder. He's a good body puncher. And if Floyd tries to get in what Dr. Cox would call a pissing contest with him, that's not, you know, advantageous to him. To an assist.
Well, I haven't read Patrick's opinion of it yet. I read yours. It's pretty good. You give the totals of the unanimous decision and everything. And even though usually I just do it to be devil's advocate, this time I'm definitely seriously just going to say Mosley because I want him to win, because I think he can. And I don't see anybody else but Pacquiao being able to do it at this point. So. Like I said, I would rather see Pacquiao versus Mosley. I think we will eventually see Mayweather versus Pacquiao either way, but I definitely want to see Mosley win. I think he can pull it off, so I'm just going to say that's my pick. Knockout, 10th round. Boom.
Good. You're picking Mosley to stop him, right?
Mosley, knockout, 10th round.
I'm telling you know what, Rich? I hope you are right. 100%, I hope you are right. Now, my friend Frank, who I've watched a lot of fights with, he's a big boxing, big MMA fan. I went to the Gotti Ward fight with him. I went to the Hopkins fight with him. He actually told me he thinks it's going to be a mismatch. He thinks that
Floyd's going to tear him apart and stop Mosley within 8 rounds. I can't see it happen. And then my dad, you met my dad, and, you know, my dad, he loves to mess with me. It's like I gave him my article the other day, and he goes, man, that was a really good article. I shared it with some guys I work with. He goes, but I got to disagree with you. I said, what would you disagree? He goes, it ain't going to go past 4 rounds. I said, excuse me? And he goes, Mayweather's going to stop him in 4 rounds. He's too fast. I looked at him, and then my dad, he couldn't hold it anymore. So I break it down and laugh, man. He goes, I had to get you. He goes, because I know you're so competitive with your picks. You hate when people disagree with you. he goes, I just got you thinking right there. He got me thinking, then the fire alarms went off in the house, and then he regretted it after that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. Anyway, we got a lot of boxing around that card, too, to talk about. Saul Alvarez is fighting Jose Miguel Cotto, that welterweight as well. Alvarez is 31-0 with 23 knockouts. Jose Miguel Cotto is 31-1 with 23 knockouts. Both 23 knockouts. That's pretty good. So that should be an interesting fight. Daniel Ponce de Leon is fighting for the WBC Latino featherweight title. He's 38-2 with 32 knockouts, fighting Cornelius Locke. 19-4 with 12 knockouts and one draw. Don't you know a little bit about that guy? I know you've talked about him before.
You know Daniel Ponce de Leon?
No, Cornelius Locke.
I've heard the name. I've only maybe seen him once or twice. I'm more interested in watching Ponce de Leon fight. I had before I knew who Juan Manuel Lopez was. We were having a party the one night, and the one guy there bets on anything. And there were four fights going on. So he goes, who are going to fight? So I gave him my predictions, and one was Ponce de Leon to beat Juan Manuel Lopez. He threw like $200 on it, and Lopez knocked him out in one round.
Well, the little radio voice just told us we have 90 seconds left. That pretty much
goes through
the boxing we have. I know this is a misprint, but it's saying they have a Mayhem in Mansfield going on May 1st in Plymouth. I don't know. Unless I haven't heard it correctly. But
yeah. Well, all I got to say,
championships is coming up. We also have Cinco de Mayhem.
Nice.
Stuff. Just go to SureDog.com, check that out, and we're gonna get cut off here in a second, but we'll have it.
So if anybody's listening to me, the Tornado says order the fight this weekend.
Yeah, definitely.
See if my prediction's right.
And go to that big event up in New Hampshire. Check that out. I'll be there, definitely. Great show. Thanks for our guests. And we'll see you next week. Also, I want to give a shout-out to Discipline, DISSIPLINE.com. Check it out. They're our newest VIP sponsor. So, thanks, folks. Have a good week.
Out. Tornado was out.
Bye-bye.